Strike from the Sea, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Chapter 1, Away from It All. Commander Robert Ainslie sat very still in a cane-backed chair and surveyed the waiting room without enthusiasm. It was painted white and almost completely bare, but for a couple of chairs and a portrait of the king on the opposite wall. An onlooker, had there been one, would have imagined Ainslie to be listening or crouching on the chair, ready to leap up. In fact, he was trying to keep his spine away from the chair back, for despite the revolving fans above his head, the room was stuffy and humid, and any sort of contact increased the discomfort and made his shirt cling to his skin like a damp rag. He looked at the shuttered window through which the harsh sunlight sliced across the room with silver bars. It seemed incredible that people could breathe out there, let alone use so much energy. Booted feet stamped lustily across some sort of a square, and he heard a Royal Marine Sergeant's voice from a great distance away, controlling the marching men, manoeuvring them like a ringmaster at a circus.
"At the halt, on the right, form squad!"
The sudden silence was almost worse. Ainslie tried not to look at his watch, knowing it would only rouse his anger again. He could feel the weariness closing in on him, and had to fight it back like something physical. Hold on a bit longer until he had settled in, as someone had remarked upon his arrival. It was hard to compare this place with Britain, he thought. November 1941, and the London he had left 4 days back had been a far cry from the naval base on Singapore Island. 4 days of flying in various aircraft, watching the changing scenery at each touchdown, meeting the mixed bunch of passengers on their way to join service units, to replace dead or wounded, to set up headquarters, and all the countless other missions of a nation at war. As he had climbed stiffly from the aircraft on Singapore Island 5 hours ago, he had sensed the difference immediately. Ainslie was 30 years old, and a professional naval officer to his fingertips. He had visited Singapore several times during his career, and that made it all the more surprising, for apart from a lot more uniforms wandering about the airport or thronging the streets through which he had been whisked in a staff car, nothing appeared to have altered. He thought again of Britain, and London in particular. Nightly air raids, rationing, blackout, and the grim knowledge that only the English Channel stood between liberty and the might of the German army. Every ally had fallen to the seemingly invincible Axis war machine, and London's streets were as full of those uniforms as Britain's and her commonwealths, Dutch and Danish, Norwegian and Free French, Belgian and Polish, Czechs and all the rest. They helped to remind everyone of the German successes almost as much as the sad defiance of their old allies. Only in the air above Britain, and along the North African shores, where the newly formed Eighth Army had somehow managed to hold the German advances, had there been actual victories. The Battle of the Atlantic, which had mounted to an increasing ferocity with each bloody convoy, had long outpaced the margin of winning or losing. It had become a matter of survival. Daily the toll of ships lost to torpedo and bomb rose higher, and the Navy's demands for more and more men increased accordingly. Officers were given commands normally offered to men of greater experience and service. Trained ratings were spread thinly over the growing mass of recruits and volunteers to share their skills as best they could. Robert Ainslie had been a submariner for almost half of his service, and had left his last command, the Tigris, just 3 months earlier, after an unbroken commission in the embattled Mediterranean. 3 months with the underground world of intelligence in the Admiralty's bomb-proof bunkers, or visiting the submarine base at Gosport, where he had done his original underwater training. And now, after all that, and the arduous flight from England, Ainslie had been sitting in this waiting room like a new boy at school. He could tell from the way he had been greeted by the base staff that they knew something of his work, if not his actual mission, which was supposed to be top secret. If anything could be kept secret when more than 2 people knew about it.